The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening, Long Island, New York, and all points beyond. For those listening, streaming through the internet, this is Jason Nazario, your host for the next hour. Coming to you live, direct, and in full effect. Here on Sports Talk 1240 AM WGBB on a Sunday evening, a rainy one here in New York. June 5th, the year of our Lord, 2016. Glad to have you with us as we talk to you about what's going on in the world of sports. Call number is 631-888-8811. It's been a long time coming sitting in front of this mic. I want to thank, of course, my man Brian Graves on the other side of the glass, producing the program for the next hour, as you got me, yours truly, to bring you everything that's going on in the world of the ice, the world of the diamond, the world of hardwood, racetrack, tennis court, golf course, you name it. From my lips to your ears, from my heart to your soul, from where I am to wherever you are, Jason Nazario coming through here, 1240 Sports Talk AM WGBB out in Babylon, Long Island. Obviously, got tons to get to here. We're going to shoot right from the hip, considering I only got about 58 minutes to go. Of course, we'll talk about the Mets finishing up in Miami with Matt Harvey with a great start, but did not come out to be victorious. But that's fine. I think it's a plus for Matt Harvey. We'll get into that. We'll get into the Yankees losing in Baltimore as they limp home after a rough road trip, as they'll host the Angels come the stadium Tuesday night after a much well-deserved day off tomorrow. We'll talk about the Stanley Cup Finals, which is now a series, 2-1. We'll get into Game 2 tonight, the NBA Finals, with the Cavs and Golden State Warriors. We'll talk a little Serena, who is still looking to capture that elusive 22nd Grand Slam title. We'll also talk little Knicks. Yeah, they got a new coach in the mix as well. But we're going to start off our program. I'd be remiss not to start the program talking about the passing of Muhammad Ali just a couple days ago, late Friday night into early Saturday morning. And Muhammad Ali was a little bit before my time. I caught Muhammad Ali, Leon Spinks. We're talking 1978. Was 9 years old. Obviously, that was a huge fight back then at that time where Spinks beating Muhammad Ali. And we know the history of Muhammad Ali. We know he was Cassius Clay. We know of everything that he went through in the 60s. Obviously, Sonny Liston, the political standpoint, all the things that what made Muhammad Ali what he was. And really, what Muhammad Ali was, when you think about it, was a man that was not ahead of his time. He was light years ahead of the country's time, his time, no matter what. Because imagine if we had a guy like that living in this day and age in the world of Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, social media, internet, etc. He would be not just a lightning rod, but he would be probably at the top athlete in the world. Now, of course, you're not going to calculate, you could calculate a lot of things, but you're going to have that tempered because you're not going to be able to do the things that you've done back then today. Because with cell phones, cameras, and all the social media sites and things of that nature that are out, TMZs, etc., there's no way that a Muhammad Ali will get away with a lot of things he does today. And not to say that he did a lot, but considering from a political standpoint, from a religious standpoint, not only him being well ahead as far as an entertainer and also a guy who, let's face it, he was the one that put showboat and self-promoting on the map. And as we know today, there's so many, and rightfully so, we're in a world of 2016 where everybody's trying to be a brand. You know, Tiger Woods. When Tiger Woods was Tiger Woods. LeBron, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, guys like that, David Beckham, guys that are putting themselves on the map, but at the same time, they have all these other avenues and all these other endeavors outside of the court or outside of the arena, the Coliseum, whatever you want to call it, that, yes, this day and age, it's conducive to do all those things. Where back then, obviously, you didn't have that, but that's what makes Muhammad Ali, or that's what made Muhammad Ali what he was. He was larger than life. He was a figure that, let's face it, was probably the most popular man on the face of the planet at his pantheon. Right, we're talking over actors, entertainers, politicians, businessmen, you name it. Everybody knew who Muhammad Ali was. Everybody. And right, I could go through the list of things that, you know, I could go through the fights, I could go through, you know, his relationship with Howard Cosell and how him and Cosell and Ali go hand in hand. And I understand for our younger generation, they probably would know who Howard Cosell is if I broke out the Howard Cosell accent, which I certainly won't. I'll spare you that. But with that being said, to have an icon such as Muhammad Ali and everything that he personified and everything that he represented, and I understand a lot of people didn't agree with it, and a lot of people probably shunned it. But you can't underestimate the power that he had as an individual, the power that he had as a man, and, of course, the power that he had as a fighter. And it would probably be in that order. Because a lot of people, when they look at Muhammad Ali, yes, of course, they're going to see what he did in the ring. They're going to look at Sonny Liston. They're going to look at going back to in the Olympics, 1960. They're going to go, you know, moving fast forward, there's classic fights with Joe Frazier, Rumble in the Jungle, Thrill in Manila, you name it. But you got to understand that he was much more than that. He was a transcendent sports figure. You know, when you look at sports figures of the 20th century, you look at Babe Ruth, you look at Jim Brown, you look at Michael Jordan and Muhammad Ali, and you can mix them all up. And if anybody put Muhammad Ali number one, I don't think a lot of people would argue that. Throw Jackie Robinson in there as well. And I understand they're going to look at just what he did in the ring or just what certain players did on the field, whether it was Babe Ruth or Michael Jordan, whatever. But Muhammad Ali, and it goes without saying, obviously not going out on a limb, was certainly one of those figures in sports and in life that when you look at the whole list of people who impacted their generation, their era, bar none, Muhammad Ali's up there. If not, he is there. Goes without saying, there's a Mount Rushmore of boxing. Please, his face, he'd probably take up two of those slots. That's how important he was. And I just wanted to start off the show. I understand it's a sad note. You know, 74 years old, passing away in Arizona there, late Friday night, early Saturday morning. But there was no way I could save Muhammad Ali to the end. You know, this isn't a fringe story. This isn't something that, you know, let me just throw this in the mix in the next half hour of the program. No, this was something I needed to start off with. Right, I was too young to see those fights. I know a lot of them, they actually played Ali Frazier 3 on ESPN today. And I'm sure they probably showed a lot of his other fights over the course of the, you know, last 36, 48 hours. And right, I could go through all those fights. I could go through what the heavyweight championship, what it meant to not only just sports, but just this country. I mean, think about that. It's just sad. The state of boxing, which I don't follow and watch as much. I know a couple of people I know, they love it. You know, they still follow it. To me, I stopped watching boxing religiously 20 years ago. And to me, it's not the same sport. It's just not. But the heavyweight championship of the world, I mean, that was the title to have more than anything in sports. But it just goes to show you that's not what it's about when it comes to boxing. I mean, the sport is, it's, please, it's, to me, it's hanging on a thread. There's no such thing as a heavyweight championship in boxing now. But I digress, because it's about Muhammad Ali. It's not about boxing. It's not about being a heavyweight champ. It's about the champ, the greatest, 74 years old. May he rest in peace. And we're just thankful that we had a person, an individual, a boxer, everything, you name it, that we were able to see. Some, I understand the younger generation did not see him, but at least I had a chance to watch a couple of those late fights of him, even Larry Holmes when he lost, when it was obviously the end of Muhammad Ali as a fighter. And then obviously Parkinson's disease and what it did to him, and obviously just his declining health over the years. But Muhammad Ali again, Cassius Clay, who passes at the age of 74, an icon to underestimate it. Because he was bigger than that. All right, so let's move on to a little baseball. Let's get to what's happening on the field. I'll start off with the Mets. Mets, who had a rough week last week. You know, they lost 2 out of 3 to the Dodgers and lost 2 out of 3 to the White Sox, including a brutal game on Wednesday. They go down to Miami for 3 games, which that place has kind of been, I don't want to say House of Horrors, a little bit of a stretch, but, you know, they've been hot and cold. There's times they go into that ballpark and, you know, they'll go ahead and win 2 out of 3, a sweep, or they'll go in there, lose 2 out of 3, and get swept. Had a chance to go for a sweep today as they won the first 2 games by Noah Syndergaard there on Friday, and then last night pulling out a 6-4 win late to bail out the Mets and bail out their bullpen for Bartolo Colon's start. Today was a pitching matchup that certainly was marquee, to say the least, with Matt Harvey going up against Jose Fernandez. Jose Fernandez continued his brilliance and dominance at home. He's now 23-1 in that ballpark down there in Little Havana. They lose 1-0, the Mets. Harvey, who, as we all know, well chronicled his issues, his problems, going back to those back-to-back starts against the Nationals, or certainly highlighted by those two particular starts, but not having a great year altogether. Bounced back there Memorial Day with a good start of his own, you know, 7 innings, 2 hits. Today, pretty much follows up with a similar effort. Did give up a run, but only 4 hits, no walks, 3 strikeouts. And the funny thing is, I'm watching SNY today afterwards, and the one thing they want to point out is, oh, where are the strikeouts? Hey, listen, you just want to have good starts from Harvey. I understand we're accustomed to having him strike out a ton of people, him getting those strikeout numbers up high. To me, what's more important is the innings pitched, the whip, which in today obviously was much less than a batter per inning, which is, to me, is synonymous with Harvey. Yes, the strikeouts, I understand that. I get it 100%. But think about it. If you're a Met fan, and despite the fact that this staff has, for all intents and purposes, 4 aces, or maybe 3.5, because although Steven Matz has been very good here to start the year after that first bad game against Miami in early April, you got to admit, this team has 3.5 aces, we'll say. Yeah, we know who the pitchers are. I'm not going to run the list. But Harvey, if you're a Met fan, yes, you want to have the dominance back. You want the swagger. You want that the Dark Knight persona. You want all that to come back. But considering his demise here and what he's trying to do to bounce back, if he goes 7 innings, gives up 4 hits, 1 run, and he only strikes out 3 and doesn't walk a batter, listen, he's on his path to trying to gain some of that back. And if you're going to look at the strikeouts as being or the lack of strikeouts as a down sign, or as a point of, hey, wait a second, you know, that's a negative. Would you rather him go 7 innings, strike out 10, but walk 3, give up 3 runs and 8 hits? Or would you rather have him pitch the way he pitched today? To me, it's simple. You want to get Harvey. The strikeouts will come. We understand we missed that old Matt Harvey 2013 and even parts of last year. But you know what? I think the strikeouts will come. How I looked at it with the whole scenario of him falling apart, I don't think it's health. He even said it's not health. Part of it, I think, is between the ears. But I think, especially in that second start in Washington, to me, he's just, I think he's just thinking too much. I think when he gets on the mound and he, you know, he's trying to settle in there. Again, the Washington Nationals, those two starts were critical. And to fall apart the way he did in those two games, that's as low as you could possibly get. You know, he was giving up 20 more hits per innings pitched. Obviously, the strikeouts were down. ERA was over 6. But now in these last two starts, he's starting to build back to that. And I think as the weather gets warmer, he's going to get better. So I think part of it is that mental makeup. But for whatever reason, it started to rub off a wrong way or started to go somewhere. You know, it certainly wasn't the Matthew Edward Harvey that we're all accustomed to seeing, that we all came to know and love. But I think with these two starts, there's certainly something to build on. And a lot of people think, oh, all the innings pitched last year, the Tommy John surgery. To me, that's nonsense. I don't buy into that. Because he's had some flashes this year. Not many. But he's had some flashes this year where he's actually pitched very good. And almost to the old Matt Harvey. The game in Cleveland where he went to the 5th inning and had a perfect game. The game in San Diego where in 6 innings he did strike out 10 batters. I understand the Padres lineup is from hunger, but at the same time, they're still major league hitters. And he still has to get them out. So, if you're a Met fan, and you're waiting for that Matt Harvey to come back, the old Matt Harvey, I don't know if we're going to see the 7-inning, 10-strikeout, you know, 1-run, 3-hit, you know, enter every game, no-hit stuff. Who knows? I think we'll see those flashes, but to me, the one thing about Harvey, and I think with more than anything, besides his talent, but part of that mental makeup is that psyche, is that I'm going to get you out no matter what. And I think he's lost some of that. Maybe not after these last couple starts, But that swagger, that chutzpah, whatever it is that you want to tag Matt Harvey with, when it comes to the way he performed back in 2013 and parts of last year, we hope to see that. We want to see that. I think we will see that. But the main thing is that can he continue to get past that? Or if he hits another rough stretch at some point in the season, you know, let's say he starts a game, his next start will be in Milwaukee on Friday. And the Brewers, obviously, you know, they're not a good team. But, you know, if he gives up a hit and walks the next batter, first and second, nobody out in the first inning, and, you know, Ryan Braun's coming up, I mean, is he going to try to outthink himself? Is he going to try to throw his next pitch through a wall? What is he going to do? That's what we got to see in Matt Harvey. That's the Matt Harvey we want to see. In fact, what you see in Jacob deGrom in some of his starts this year when he doesn't have his stuff, he has it with that intestinal and I like to call testicular fortitude. We haven't seen that with Matt Harvey yet. When the going gets tough, he kind of goes through the motions and he almost, to a certain extent, he feels sorry for himself. Well, you can't do that. You got to go ahead, keep plugging, keep fighting. And I think with Matt Harvey, hopefully he'll get out of the woods. I don't think he's out of the woods yet. He's got to put a few more of these starts together. But I would think that whenever he gets to that rough stretch, that rough patch, whether it's in a game or a course of a couple of starts or a couple of weeks, whatever it may be, I hope whatever he's learned in April and May, he certainly applies it June through the rest of this year and obviously for the rest of his career. Now, as for the Mets themselves, excuse me, I know they've been hit with the bugaboo of injuries here. We all know Duda's now out with the stress fracture in his back. Darno, who knows what's happened? I think he's supposed to be going through some rehab starts in the near future. But with Darno, you know, you breathe on the guy. He's on the DL. The news about David Wright with the neck issue, the herniated disc, he's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks with some rest. And if you're Sandy Alderson, you got to start thinking about making some moves. And I understand it's not going to come easy. It's not going to, probably not going to come cheap. And it's not going to come anytime soon. So when you have those three things at this juncture, you're kind of behind the eight ball. And what I mean by that is a lot of teams aren't going to sell their players off just to help out the Mets here on June 5th. They're going to go ahead and look at what's out there in the landscape, try to plug in those holes, because you don't want the Nats, who have now been in first place for about 2 weeks. And listen, so some of the margins, I know they're at 10-8. I didn't get the finals. As a matter of fact, I'll pull that up in a few minutes to find out what that was. But the Reds, who had an early lead, 5-0, and it was 10-8 late in the game there. So the Met lead, which was cut to 1 in the division, could be now down to 2. Two back of the Nats. But with that being said, the Mets can't go ahead and just get that stud player, whatever, you know, in the next few days. And as you all know, the Mets aren't going to go after the $20 million player or the guy who's got 3-4 more years at $18 million just to satiate the Met fan. And me as a diehard Met fan, I don't think you should do that anyway, whether they have the money or not. And I understand the argument for some Met fans will say, well, hey, listen, it's New York. We went to World Series last year. We got the money. We should bring that guy in, so on and so forth. Hey, why? To me, I understand it's about cost with the Mets and all of a sudden, and you know the type of guys that they look for. They look for the high on base guys. They're all sabermetricians. For the most part, I've never been a fan of all the sabermetrics, but you know what? It's worked so far. Sandy's had that plan. He's built it, and guess what? You can't argue with the fact that it's been successful. Now, I understand not everybody's going to be on base, is going to be 380 and up. And their OPS is going to be 900 to 1,000. I get that. But now when you're looking at what the Mets needs, what the Mets needs are, you're looking at first base, you're looking at third, and you're looking at catcher. And it's a matter of who they're going to get into the fold or into the mix that's going to come reasonably cheap, not necessarily just in contract and in years of that contract, but also what you're going to give up. And being able to plug these guys into the lineup to give you that boost. My thing is that the time will come for that. And I think the Mets, because of their pitching, will be in the race. Now, of course, you want to win the division. You certainly don't want to go in as a wild card because we all know we got that Russian roulette one-game deal where, yeah, let's just say for argument's sake, Mets-Dodgers, you got to go to L.A. and you're facing Kershaw. All right, well, hey, we have a Matt Harvey, or we may have Noah Syndergaard or Jacob deGrom. That's great, but as you know, Kershaw's killed us over his career. And in their biggest game last year, game four in the NLDS, he only pitched seven innings where he had one run. So you want to stay away from that one-game playoff at all costs. Just ask the Pittsburgh Pirates that. So Met fans shouldn't panic. I'm pulling you guys off the ledge now. You know, don't move Neil Walker to third so you can bring up Dilson Herrera. You don't want to mess up that tandem at up the middle with Asdrubal Cabrera and Neil Walker. They've been a fine fit there as far as shoring up that middle, up the middle defense. And you only hope that in due time, the Mets are going to make a move. They have to. It's not even a matter just for their fans. It's just, right, you're trying to make it to the World Series. And the way the pitching is lined up, you want to be able to go in knowing that you have this team that has championship aspirations to put them in that right position. And the only way you're going to put them in that right position is to get those pieces. But again, Met fans have to be patient because the deadline is the 31st of July, and we're still 7 weeks away from that. And like I said, they'll be in the race with the Nats. I don't think they're going to fall that far back, barring any major injury, especially with the starting rotation. But with that said, I think the Mets should be fine up until they get those pieces. You just only hope that the Mets, you know, don't go into any prolonged losing streaks. I'm not saying 7-8 games, but, you know, they lose 12 of 17 or something like that, where now you're into July and you're about 6 games back of the division and maybe 4 back on the wild card. And now you're going to start to push the panic button. No, shouldn't happen that way. And the Mets have the rest of this trip where they go to Pittsburgh, play 3 games, and then Milwaukee for 4 before they come home. And like I said, I think the Mets will be fine. But the Mets got to hit, and they got to score some runs. And hopefully the offense, wherever it may come from, will be coming sooner than later. Let me get to the Yankees before we get to the break. I may start in with the Yankees and then come back from the break with the Yankees. And I think the only way to sum up the Yankees is this. And how I would put it if I was Brian Cashman. If I'm Brian Cashman, I would go to management. And I understand you don't want to wave the white flag on a season because it is only June 5th. But at the same time, this team has aging superstars, a pitching staff that is just borderline from hunger. I mean, you don't know what you're going to get from half the time. You know, Tanaka's good. He's a good, solid starter. Before the money they gave him, no, he's not locked down by any stretch. Severino, they had to send back to the minors. Ivan Nova is always going to be up and down. Michael Pineda, he's a head case. Even though he was able to get the win in Detroit the other day, gave you a good effort. CeCe, and he's pitched well, but do you expect that to continue? So the question that you have, if you're Brian Cashman and you go to Hank and Hal, I'd say in a month from now, do you say, hey, do we trade two of these relievers? I think if you're the Yankees, you'd want to keep Betances. He's a homegrown guy. You want to keep him there. But to get some assets back to replenish that farm system with the likes of trading away Andrew Miller and Aroldis Chapman. Now, the Yankees, I tell you, they just came off a brutal road trip, a brutal loss today where they had a 1-0 lead in the eighth inning. They had to overcome an hour 37-minute rain delay. And then Chapman, to come in to try to get his 10th save and as many chances, ends up losing a game on a Matt Wieters 2-run single, and they lose 3-1. I mean, if that isn't as bad as it gets, then I don't know what to tell you. Yanks on a 10-game road trip, 4-6. Definitely not what you want. Again, the Yankees are a mediocre team. You know, you're expecting A-Rod, you're expecting Teixeira, two guys that, let's face it, are on the other side of the mountain, or in this case, certainly on the back nine of his career, A-Rod's already, he's walking up to the 18th hole. And Beltran has been, and probably Ellsbury, been your most consistent hitters. Other than that, you're getting a mishmash of whomever, Torres, you know, Didi, who, you know, he's been decent, but, you know, you don't expect a lot out of Didi Gregorius. You know, Starlin Castro's fallen, you know, from the start of the year when he was batting 350. Now he's in the 250s. So, I understand it's all about selling tickets and trying to get people to that ballpark so they could spend money on merchandising. And, you know, there's the Mariano Rivera Day is coming up, which I'm sure is already long sold out. And I'm sure they're going to probably bring back somebody else toward the end of the year. There'll probably be a Derek Jeter Day they'll squeeze in there just to sell more tickets. But you know what? Hey, I understand you're not the Mets, and I'm not trying to compare the Yankees to the Mets by any stretch of the imagination. But you know what? Got to give Sandy credit. They've done it right. And I'm not trying to say that the blueprint for the Yankees' success is to do what the Mets have done. But guess what? If you could trade away a Beltran to get back some assets, if you could trade away those two relief pitchers that I mentioned to get some assets back, you got to do it. Well, I mean, what is this team? This team's going to go 84-78, maybe. Make a wild card and then lose in a wild card game for what? I think that's what the Yankees should do. And we may talk a little bit more Yanks on the way back. If not, we'll move on to other things. We've got the NBA Finals, NHL, Stanley Cup. Bunch of other things to talk about in the next half hour. We got it here for you right here on Sports Talk 1240 AM radio and online at WGBB. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back as we get to the second half hour here of our program. Jason Nazario on the mic. 631-888-8811. Sports Talk 1240 AM or streaming on sportstalk1240am.com. Glad to have you with us here on this Sunday evening. Before we get to the NBA Finals, and I know that's underway, last I checked was 17-13. Golden State up against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Game 2 out in the Oracle Arena in Oakland. Quickly, just to go through baseball. You know, when you look at some of the teams that got off to those great starts and they kind of hit the skids here, it's funny, when I look at the National League East, I know the Phillies got off that tremendous start. Now they're starting to come back down to earth. The clock's striking 12 on them. So, you know, quickly, when we look through the baseball, you know, the couple of surprises that you see, we'll start with the National League. You know, Marlins have played well. They've hung in there. And that's without Stanton having a big year. I mean, he's batting, now he's almost batting 200. And he didn't do much today. They only had 5 hits, and the one that was scored was just on a base hit, I believe, by Derek Dietrich. But between the Marlins playing well, Phillies have, you know, nosedived now, and I would think that they will probably start to fall out of the mix. You know, the Cardinals, who are always at the top of the charts there, you know, with the Cubs leading the Central, and to no one's surprise. But the Cardinals have certainly, I mean, listen, they played fine. And I bet you'll have a streak in them, but you think that the Cardinals just maybe one year that it's not going to click, it's not going to get put together to that's going to make it at least to the to get to the wild card round, which, let's face it, you know, that division is going to be long over, barring disastrous injuries for the Cubbies. And then the Giants, who have just been on a tear since, you know, the early part of May. Dodgers, you expect them to be in the mix for a wild card. They've done well. Everybody else in the division, you know, Arizona, a lot of people have picked them and thought that they were going to be, you know, the surprise in the National League, you know, obviously bringing in Shelby Miller, who's been a disaster, and they got to scratch themselves over that trade. They traded Dansby Swanson, that number one overall pick a couple years ago, and you know, a bunch of other young players, including pitchers, for Shelby Miller, and he's just been an abomination. I mean, there's no way to put it. And in the American League, you know, Orioles, Red Sox, now they're in a tie for first place with the Orioles, just percentage points ahead of the Red Sox. The Blue Jays, which they've been a little bit of a letdown. Now, granted, they're four games over and 2.5 back, but four in the loss of the Orioles. But, you know, a lot of people thought that they were going to have a big year. And granted, you know, they lost David Price in the offseason. Tulowitzki is certainly now, he's back with his injury-prone self, so there's no surprise with him there. But, you know, you expect a little bit more from the Blue Jays considering the year that they had last year and the run that they had in the postseason. And then how about the Indians? You know, the Indians, who a lot of people also thought that they could make some, you know, surprise moves and, you know, maybe make a push for the Central with the Royals there, the defending champs, two-time AL champs. You know, give them, they've done a stupendous job. Now, I know the Royals have hit the skids here a little bit in a little bit of a losing streak, and Cleveland has now won five in a row, but, you know, give the Indians credit. You know, there's probably five guys on the Indians you could name, and if you do, then God bless you. That means you're a big baseball fan, but they've certainly done a tremendous job. Give them credit, and the White Sox are certainly plummeted. Remember, they got off to that hot start, and now, you know, they just traded for James Shields from San Diego, who they get in a trade, so they're trying to bolster their rotation with Sale, Jose Quintana, and then now Shields. And Matt Latos, who got off to a good start, is certainly, he's hit the skids of late. And then out west between Texas and Seattle, they've kind of flip-flopped. The Rangers have certainly played better of late, where Seattle's kind of, you know, hit a little bit of a tough stretch. The Astros have certainly been a disappointment considering what they've done last year. And the A's, you expect them to be where they are. And the Angels, you know, they just have no hitting. And obviously, you know, four of their top pitchers have had, or at least three of them, I believe, on the top of my head, Garrett Richards. You know, he's the first one that comes to mind, all out with Tommy John surgery. So there you go with the baseball. I can get into a little bit more, but obviously only got about 23 minutes or so, so I want to get to the few other things that I have on the docket. NBA Finals, let's go there. Game 2, certainly long on the way in Oakland, California. Get a quick update of the score. Hopefully listening to me while I got the volume on a little bit low. And again, you know, I'll bring you up to right before halftime with that. But the Cavs are looking to try to get the equalizer, and they desperately need to. I mean, let's face it. This is a must-win game for the Cavs. And if you don't think so, then you're not paying attention. I understand it's the first of four. I get it that just because the Cavs, if they go down 0-2, that they can't even the series and go back to Oracle even at 2. But let's face it. Anytime you have to win four out of five games, especially against a team that's had the record-setting season that the Golden State Warriors had, and they are the defending champs, it is an uphill battle, to say the least. And right now, with the first quarter about to come to a close, the game is tied at 19. So right now, you're looking at just a low score there, considering first half. Let me pull up a couple of stats, if I may, before I get into a little bit of the game on Thursday and then also the rest of the series. But with the game tied as the first is about to close, LeBron hasn't even scored. He's 0 for 4 as from what I see right now. Steph Curry's hit a 3. He's at 5 points. Draymond Green with 6. So, you know, listen, obviously it's very early. So got a whole game to go, but it's tied there first quarter. As far as the game on Thursday night, if you're a Cav fan, it certainly doesn't bode well when you have your bench, the Warriors bench, that is, just annihilate the Cav bench 45-10. And J.R. Smith starting a game where he plays 35 to 38 minutes and he only scores 3 points. And on top of all that, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson combined for about 20 points and you lose double figures. I know they're going to put more emphasis on defense tonight, and rightfully so. Curry and Thompson were non-factors of the game, but when you have Sean Livingston go for 20, when you have Leandro Barbosa go for 15, when you have Andrew Bogut going for 12, when you have these guys that are just, you know, unexpectedly putting up points that you don't think they should. Could you imagine if Curry and Thompson had decent games for them? I mean, they would have won by 45 points. So, tonight, you would think this game would be a little bit more probably defensive-oriented from the Cavs standpoint. You know, they fell asleep on a lot of backdoor passes and open looks and things of that nature. You would think in the last couple of days they would shore that up. But as I said before, and I'll say it again, you know, LeBron doesn't have to have a Herculean effort to win this game tonight in order for them to go back to Cleveland tied at one. But you're going to have to get guys off the bench, and you're going to have a contribution from J.R. Smith in order for them to get that nice, cozy flight home, 3.5 hours, or whatever it may be, in order for them to get back in the series and get those contributions from those said players. You know, Channing Frye didn't have a good game the other night as well. But I'll say, and it's not going on a limb, if the Cavs do not win tonight, the series is over. If people could argue that, and again, I understand. Right, first of four, I get that. But do you think that the Golden State Warriors, with everything they've done this year, and of course coming off a Western Conference final when they were down 3-1 to win the last three games of that series, you think they're going to lose 4-5? And that means that the Cavs are going to have to win two games at Oracle. Two. Right, I understand they can win the two games at home. I dig that. I get it. Win the two games at home, and then you only have to win a game five and then win game six. But, yeah, they're going to lose four in a row, Golden State, after being up 2-love? I don't think so. Not happening. How I think the series will play out will be like this. I think Golden State knows they win tonight, they'll be in the driver's seat. They don't want to go to Cleveland, tied at one. Look what happened to them last year. They lost a game two in their building. They lost game three in their building. And I get it, the Cavaliers didn't have Kevin Love, they didn't have Kyrie Irving, understood. But I'm sure they're going to remember that, hey, we need to get this game tonight. Steve Kerr rallied the troops to say, let's get this game tonight, and all we have to do is get one in Cleveland, and hopefully we'll have a coronation to put a validation on that 73-9 season as one of the great teams of all time. I think the Cavs could even the series, even down 0-2, but I would think if they win tonight, the series is going to go five games. If they lose tonight, there is a possibility the series will go seven games, but I think it will end in six. I would love for it to go to seven games. It will be a ratings bonanza. ABC would do cartwheels. And I'm sure ABC right now, they are praying as they eat their filet mignon with the little all gratin potatoes on the side with a little Cabernet, are hoping for a LeBron-esque MVP-type performance tonight so they can have a 1-1 series so the ratings can be sky-high come Wednesday night at Quicken Loans. And let's just squash all this LeBron legacy talk, because in the last few days where people at work are just, you know, reading some of the stuff online, oh, LeBron's legacy, if he loses this final, it's going to be, you know, three in a row, and he's going to be 2-5 in an NBA final. Now, if they were playing the Oklahoma City Thunder, I would agree that his legacy, not that it's going to be on the line, let's not get crazy, but, right, if they would have gone up against OKC, and I'm not trying to make, you know, OKC out to be some pansy of a team. Obviously, they're a solid team, and they were literally one game away from going back to an NBA Finals, their first one since 2012. Certainly didn't happen that way. But my point is that they would have had the home court advantage. There probably would have been a little bit more pressure on them to win, knowing that they didn't have to go up against the Golden State Warriors and the whole 73-9 juggernaut. Where now, are they playing with a little house money? Maybe not house money, but right. There's not that intense pressure knowing that, oh, because they have home court and because LeBron and everything else, that, hey, they're going to win the series in six, and if they don't, it's going to be a blemish. It would be more of a blemish on LeBron's let's say, finals legacy, because we all know what he is as a player. I mean, he's a top 10 player of all time. Top 10. In some ranks, you want to put him top 5, that's kind of tough to put him ahead of Russell, Wilt, Kareem, Oscar, Jerry West. But he's on that back 5. He's on the back 5. But to me, if the Cavs lose the series, now he doesn't want to get swept here, which I don't think will happen. The record doesn't look pretty. 2-5 in NBA Finals and losing the last 3. I get that. But you know what? Only one of the teams that he's been to the Finals should have won that final. And a lot of it had to do with his performance, especially those middle 3 games in Dallas, which was the 2011 Miami Heat team, which was his first year there. That's the one. I think if he were to look at all of his NBA Finals in his career, that's the one he'd like to have back. All the other ones, hey, listen, Ray Allen bailed him out in 2013, as we all know, because they were on the cusp of losing that one. And could you imagine what that would have looked like if they would have lost that one? LeBron would have been 1-5 right now, on the verge of maybe going 1-6. So let's not forget that. But as far as the legacy concerned, let's not get crazy about it. I mean, obviously, if he wins this series, what it does for the city of Cleveland, finally bringing a championship to that town, I mean, he could go off into the sunset after this and that, and away we go. I think that when you look at the arc of his career, from the way it started to the middle to now, if it's going to be this year, great. If it's not, until he retires, until he laces up those Nikes and hangs them in his locker, the one thing that he would need to bring, or to have on his resume, is to bring that championship to Cleveland. Now, you'd only hope that he could still do it somewhat at the peak of his powers. So let's face it, 13 years in the league, everybody looks at him as an indestructible robot, but guess what? How many of those type of years is he going to have left? He may have next year, he may have that. But like Charles Barkley says, Father Time is undefeated. And if they don't win next year and the year after next, he's just pretty much, you know, injuries start to come up, or, you know, his invincibility on the court starts to wane, or some nagging injury or whatever. It happens to everybody. It happens to everybody. And I understand that even, let's say, a 34, 35-year-old LeBron, even if he brought them a title, but a more mature Kyrie and a more seasoned Kevin Love and whoever else they happen to bring in there, they carry the mail and bring them the championship, where either one of them two are the MVP and LeBron is just kind of part of the supporting cast. He's part of that team, but it's not going to be the same as if he was the man to bring that title to Cleveland. So I think, yes, he needs to bring that city, that team, that organization a championship. But if he doesn't bring it in this series, I don't think it's going to destroy his legacy. Yeah, 2-5 is not pretty. I get that. But still, look at what he's going up against. And Jerry West said it best, that to look at his finals record to quantify what LeBron James is as a player is ridiculous. Because Jerry West, an all-time great, top 6 player in NBA history, what was his finals record? I understand he went up against those Celtic teams and they had a million All-Famers, but still, your record is what your record is. But does that discount you because of your record that you were never a great player? That you were never a generational player? No. So obviously that's the deal there with LeBron. Quickly on the Knicks, Jeff Hornacek. I know not the most sexiest name in the coaching carousel, but 3-year deal. You know, don't know if Rambis, I haven't checked recently. I'm sure it hadn't been announced yet, but I know a lot of people thought if Rambis is still a part of the staff, that's not going to look good, which it won't. Even if he's just part of the organization, I don't care. Scout, water boy, whatever, it's still not a good look. There's no way, shape, or form that you have to have a guy who's been on that staff as soon as just 2 months ago, and then here he is lurking in the shadow somewhere where Jeff Hornacek is going to have to look over his shoulder time and time again to have him come back in the mix. All right, before we talk about some other stuff here, I want to get to Stanley Cup Finals. Got about 12 minutes. Got Mike on the line joining us here on 1240 AM Sports Talk Radio. Mike, thanks for the call. How you doing?
What's up, Jason?
What's going on?
There's an old friend of yours from St. Mary's, actually. How you doing, man?
Hey, what's going on? This isn't Mike Azzoni.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, my man. I haven't spoken to this. I haven't spoken to this caller right here in ages. Probably since grade school, which we're talking about 30 plus years ago. So, Mike.
Kidding. Remember all those football games we used to have back in the day?
Oh, as if they were last week.
I hear that.
Absolutely, man.
I remember having that Chris Chambliss glove, that first baseman mitt that you and I both had.
Yes, I remember that too, Mike. Oh, my goodness, yes.
I know. Hey, so what do you think is going to happen this year with the I'm talking football because I'm a big football fan.
I know you're a Jet fan.
With Fitzpatrick, is he going to sign or what?
I think he is. I mean, I don't understand why it's taking so long, Mike, to think that when Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker were holding that quote-unquote little boycott, just to have him back in the mix. I understand it's probably over a few million dollars. I think the last thing I read was that, $12 million was supposed to be the number. I don't know if that's not good enough for Fitzpatrick and his people, but I would think they got to get him there sooner than later because you're already into June. Training camp is going to open up in about another 6 weeks or so. You want to get him in there before then, and you certainly don't want this to drag on any further, but I would think that he's going to stay there because if not, some other team would have, gobbled him up by now. And then the worst thing, Mike, how I look at it is this. Could you imagine if they go into training camp unsigned and then somebody on another team, I can't think of a team, but let's just say somebody on another team, their quarterback gets hurt, and now they go to Fitzpatrick and they sign him away from the Jets.
Exactly.
It's a waste. But, I would think they're going to get it done, and hopefully they'll get it done before the 4th of July. If they don't get it done by then, to me, that'd be the deadline. If he's not signed by then I'd really be worried.
Yeah, I'm worried now because he could be in there keeping that chemistry going, from last year. And now it's like, Gino's taking over. And Gino was going to start last year before he got punched in the jaw.
Right.
So I think they're leaning towards Gino anyway, but I guess we'll see.
No, we will. And I can imagine. I know you're a season ticket holder, the whole nine, and I'm sure it's got to be frustrating to say the least because, when you look back at last season – and obviously, one game away, from making the postseason. I know they had that tough fourth quarter in Buffalo. But right, you want to keep that chemistry. Fitzpatrick, obviously he's a smart quarterback. He's the type of guy that, he's not going to hurt you more than he's going to harm you. Oh, I should say, I said that wrong. He's going to help you more than he's going to harm you, but then there could be times where he can harm you because he doesn't have the strong arm. But right, you don't want to put Geno in the mix. You certainly don't want to have Bryce Petty or even the guy they just drafted. I don't even think that he would be anywhere in the mix, but still, you certainly don't want to have that uncertainty hanging over your head, knowing that you had a 10-6 season, that you kind of make the next step, this coming year. Brady may be out these first four games, so you want to get off to a fast start. I agree, man. I would think, if not by the 4th of July, I would think they'd have him signed by then, but after that, it's anybody's call.
Exactly. Well, we'll see what happens, man.
Absolutely.
Good luck to your Mets. I know you're a big Mets fan. Right?
Yes, I always have been. And one other thing before I let you go, Mike, because I remember back in the day, because I'm still a Steelers fan after all these years, believe it or not. And I know we used to root for the Steelers a lot, so I'm kind of curious, how'd you go from the Steelers to the Jets?
Well, my father had season tickets to the Jets. And
I do remember that.
The sack exchange.
Yes.
At Shea.
Of course.
That's what got me. And then from there on, I haven't really missed a game since.
All right, good job by you, Mike. Let me tell you, man, because obviously, hey, you suffered. I don't have to tell you. I mean, it's.
I know. I could have stayed with you, man. And had some championships already. Oh my God.
No, absolutely, man. Yeah, I've stood going back, and that's the '70s. He's a guy that I went to grade school with, so he could tell you. So yeah, I didn't jump on a bandwagon. I've tried and true all these years. So
I hear you, man. But, it's my father's fault,
No, hey, man. But isn't that how that's usually the case, right? It's because your father or your grandfather, and then it just. It's passed down generation to generation, and hey,
And I'm bringing my son now to every game, so he's going to have to endure what I endured for the last 40 years.
That's right. So right, all the pain and suffering. That's it. Just like if you had a million in the bank, and God forbid, knock on wood, you pass away. Guess what? That's passing on to him. So guess what? Whatever sports teams that you've rooted for over the years, and you've suffered. Hey, he's getting that too.
Exactly, man. Hey, it was good talking to you, Jason.
Yes, Mike, it's a pleasure, man. And, hey, hopefully before the summer's out and definitely maybe before football season, we could link up. We'll connect on Facebook, and hopefully we'll get together sometime soon.
Heck yeah, bro.
All right, man. You too. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. All right. Thank you very much. All right. Look at that, man. Wow. That's a surprise and a blast from the past. That's a guy, like you said, I used to play stickball with, football. Yeah, we were good buddies. And this is going back, oh, my goodness, late 70s, early 80s. So they just to show you, I'm showing my age there a little bit. We got less than 10 minutes, about 7 minutes to go, so let me brush through and breeze on through with the rest of the sports world here. Just real quick, 34-30, Cavaliers and Warriors with the Golden State Warriors up by four there. 7:56 to go. I'll listen to the rest of it on the car on the way home. And again, as I said before, this is a must win for the Cavs. I understand they can win the two games at home and then it's a toss up from there, but if you think that LeBron and company are going to win four of the next five to win a series, just think back at what happened with the Warriors in the last series down 3-1. You know, if they're going to get that close to winning a championship, they're going to taste it. And if they're up 2-0, I think they can win a series in five games. And that's it. I want a long series. I want it to be minimum six, and let's go seven. You know, and what a scene would it be? Could you imagine a game six in Cleveland with the Cavaliers up 3-2? It would be unbelievable. And the ratings would be through the roof. Is it going to happen? Slim and none at this point. Real quick to the hockey. The Sharks win in overtime. We had a couple of overtime games here to start off this NHL unlikely Stanley Cup final between the San Jose Sharks and the Pittsburgh Penguins. So we have a series, 2-1. Game number four, I believe, will be tomorrow night, and then game five will be Thursday in Pittsburgh. Schedules are different now because the NBA, they extended their schedule. The NBA finals used to be Thursday, Sunday, Tuesday. Now they stretched it out because of the travel. So game three of the NBA finals will be on Wednesday, and then Friday will be game four before game five back in Oakland, if there is a game five, that Monday. But as far as the Stanley Cup finals are concerned, I'll say it quick because I got 5 minutes. My theme coming into this was with the Penguins is that their quest for a cup has come much later than sooner. And the reason why I say that is because think about when they won their cup back in 2009 after coming off of a cup final the year before when they played the Penguins in both of those years. That was supposed to be the mini dynasty. That was supposed to be Cup Central, considering the likes of the same cast of characters pretty much you see now. Chris Letang, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Marc-Andre Fleury was the top goalie then. Now you got Matt Murray who's in net, which has just pretty much come out of nowhere to dominate and lead his team to two victories away from their first cup since 2009. But all the disappointing losses that they've had along the way. If you're a Ranger fan, you know good and well. You know, 2 years ago when they had a 3-1 lead against the Rangers and they spit the bit and lost that. Last year, I understand they were undermanned, injured. You know, they lost to the Rangers there, first round. They lost back-to-back in 2011 and 2012, back-to-back first-round losses. They got embarrassed in 2013 the Bruins when they got swept in a conference final. So to think that they're actually at the Cup now, and I think they're going to win the series, I thought beforehand, because San Jose, to me, are like the capital, Washington Capitals of the West. I'm rooting for San Jose hard. I want to see them get their first Cup. But I think it's just time. Pittsburgh had that unbelievable end to their season. As far as late January, they were out of the playoff mix. You know, they ended their season 27-9-1 to go through the playoffs and pretty much, you know, they killed the Rangers in the first round. It was payback for the last 2 years. Then they upset Washington unbelievably in six games with the Caps. What else is new? Losing a second round. You know, that's going to be the storyline going into the next year. And then beating Tampa in seven games after they were down 3-2. They had to go to Tampa and win a big game. So there you go. So I think the Penguins will be fine. They win tomorrow night. They're going to win a series. They'll probably have the coronation there in game five. I would think San Jose, they know that they need to win this game tomorrow night. I think they will, but I can see the Penguins. I'd like to see, again, another long series. I think San Jose will win tomorrow night, but I think the Penguins will probably end up winning in six. I don't think it will go to a seventh game. And Sid the Kid will hoist the cup again. Couple of notes real quick. Serena going for that 22nd Grand Slam was short. That elusive Grand Slam to tie Steffi Graf all time for women's Grand Slam titles. She loses to Garbine Muguruza yesterday 7-5, 6-4, so she'll give her next attempt at Wimbledon, where she's been very successful there out in London. She'll go ahead and try to get that 22nd final. It'll be even nice for her to win it there and then come to Queens in late August into September to win that 23rd to be the all-time women's Grand Slam champ. But obviously it's a lot of tennis ahead of us, but let's see if Serena, if she could be able to pull that off. And then, lastly here, of course, before we have Jake and Dan come on, I should have mentioned that at the bottom of the hour. Jake and Dan will follow me from 9 to 10. They'll continue with what's going on in the world of sports. I'm sure they'll keep you up to date. As a matter of fact, now it's 41-30 between Golden State and Cleveland, and this is a huge juncture of the game. 5 minutes ago, if Cleveland doesn't corral this uprising by the Warriors here. This game could be long over in the third quarter, so keep that in mind before we sign off. And lastly, I was going to mention about Ryan Fitzpatrick. We talked about it a bit before with Mike, who called in. Again, if he's not signed by the 4th of July, I'd start worrying. I repeat it again. I'll start worrying if that's the case. So there you go. So that's 1 hour of sports talk. I try to squeeze it all in. Grateful, thankful for my man, Brian Graves, on the other side of the glass, for tuning in and for chiming in with everything that's gone on. I want to thank Mike Gazzoni, my old friend, for giving me a call. Thanks to everybody out there listening on 1240 AM or online at Sports Talk 1240 AM WGBB here in Babylon. Real quick, June 5th. Today would have been Prince's 58th birthday and would have been Bob Probert, my all-time favorite tough guy, the GOAT of all time. He would have been 51. May they both rest in peace. Peace, love, and God bless everybody. Enjoy the rest of your evening. And I got my man coming up here on the next show, Jake and Dan, here at 9 o'clock. Signing off. Good night.
Necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.